hands it off. Left circle, McNabb. Dorothy of one-timer. Blocked. Rattles around. Score!
Nobody is ever satisfied with one. So we're back for a second hour of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show.
Eichel takes it on his backhand. Forehand pass. Hanifin! Score! Noah Hanifin powers
from the Finley Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studio and live at lvsportsnetwork.com. Here is Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Hour number two of the VGK Insider Show rolling along here on a Thursday. And the VGK Insider Show is brought to you by the Dollar Loan Center, where your first loan is on us. Apply for free at don'tbebroke.com to get up to $5,000. Hour number two, Chris Chapman, what are we going to do?
Sticks down, drop the puck for hour number two of the VGK Insider Show.
What was that voice?
My corny radio narrator voice.
Where did that come from?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
that was really disappointing.
Yes.
That hurt me.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, that hurt me.
Hour number two of the VGK Insider Show. All right, I'll stop now.
Yeah, don't do that. Come on, stop doing that. That's not good at all.
You know, I used to work with someone who had the corniest, cheesiest, like he would pretend to do the radio voice, and then you listen to him talk, and you're like, that's not what your voice sounds like. Just stop.
I feel like I know who you're talking about.
You may.
And
he doesn't work here anymore, but yeah, you may be able to guess.
Yeah.
Used to be on the station.
That's good
actually stuff.
We won't. You're making it too obvious now.
Well,
we'll skirt the issue. I was aware of who it was.
Okay.
As soon as you said it, and I was just trying to be like, yeah, I've got a pretty good idea of who you're talking about, and we could have moved on from there. But then you're like, hey, let's narrow it down a little bit more.
Well, let's move on.
Oh, boy, Chapman. Okay. Moving on, we are going to continue our love to the Golden Knights for winning a championship a year ago today. That's right. It's the one-year anniversary of the Vegas Golden Knights winning the Stanley Cup, scoring 9 goals and defeating the Florida Panthers in 5 games. We've heard from Vince Sapienza earlier on in the program. We also heard from you, our listeners, as you dialed in early on today. But now we're going to hear from good friend of the show, Danny Webster with the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Danny, first and foremost, how is the summer treating you so far?
Summer is treating me very well. It is now better knowing that Chapman has the radio voice of like a 1960s DJ right there that kind of sets the tone. I kind of need him to answer the phones like that going forward.
That will not
happen.
Yeah,
like, Chapman, why don't you answer the phones that way?
Caller number
one. Why don't you answer the phones that way?
Hey, Danny, how are you today?
Doing well.
I can't believe this is a thing that we're doing right now. But hey, it is what it is. Chapman, put that voice away and never, ever, ever bring it back out to play. Okay, so Danny, obviously we're digging into what happened a year ago today, June 13th, 2023. The Golden Knights, they win the Stanley Cup, first time in franchise history. It happens in year number 6, just as Bill Foley predicted it would. I guess a year later, what do you remember most about that day?
I think just what I remember the most was that entire atmosphere leading up from start to finish. I think I got to T-Mobile at around 3 o'clock that afternoon, and you could just feel the buzz outside. I can only imagine it wasn't as hot as it is today, but it was like close to like 104, 105. And T-Mobile Toshiba Plaza is packed to the gills with people, like ready to celebrate, ready to party. And hasn't even been a game played yet. There hasn't been a final score determined, but there's people packed outside Toshiba Plaza. I'm hoping there was enough water that day because it was just ridiculously scorching hot. And I think the biggest thing for me wasn't really the game itself, but it was more so what happened before the game when they did the starting lineup introductions and 5 of the 6 remaining original Misfits were introduced. And it just felt like after each player was announced, and once they got through the Misfit line, it just seemed like it got louder and louder, and that set the tone for what can only be described as probably one of the biggest shellackings in a cup final game that we've ever seen. And just that whole atmosphere from start to finish was just a party. It was insane. It was so loud. It was deafening. I went back and looked at some of the old videos I took from that night, just listening to the crowd crescendo, the goal horn probably blowing some holes through the speakers. Like, everything about that night just seemed like it was over the top. And then you go outside and you see everything that's happening at Toshiba Plaza. So the atmosphere and the environment for me that night is probably what I take away from. And then you realize, oh, there was a hockey game and it happened and they scored 9 goals. So it was just everything just toppled onto it that set up the stage for what would be an insane night.
You know, it's interesting because you're setting the stage in terms of the atmosphere, and I agree with you. It felt like the beginning of a party. It felt like everyone's anticipation was simply in the headspace of this team's going to win tonight and it's going to be a celebration. I had that same feeling going to the rink. Like, I remember telling somebody what my prediction was before the game ever started. I had 6-1 Vegas. That was my official prediction in terms of what I thought was going to happen. I thought it was going to be blowout. I thought the Golden Knights were going to win handily, and I thought it would be a celebration all night long. And I guess kind of the question that I have is, like, what led to that confidence? Like, I had it. You kind of felt it, right? Like, everybody in the building felt it. The fans felt it. The players felt it. Bruce Cassidy felt it enough to start an all misfits starting lineup. Like, where did that come from?
You know, I think when we were in the locker room the day before game 5, and I remember going around just talking to a couple of the players, and I kind of asked the same thing to Alec Martinez, because he had been in this situation before with a chance to win the cup, but not just to win the cup, but win the cup on home ice. And I think when you're in a position up 3-1 going back home, and you have the chance in that home ice environment to win a championship, you do not under any circumstances want to bring it back to a game 6 in Florida, because then suddenly you lose that game, you delay the celebration of what you thought was going to happen, then you have to go back to Florida, you don't know if Matthew Tkachuk is going to play, and then suddenly Florida has confidence that they can go back home and they could probably steal another one, and then suddenly it's a game 7. So I feel like going into that game 5, you had this kind of sudden confidence that, yeah, they were going to win no matter what, but I don't think they wanted to lose in front of that home crowd under any circumstances. And I think that's where that confidence comes from, because you have to bottle that emotion. You have to bottle all of the hoopla that's going around. You have to bottle up everything that's going on in terms of the crowd, in terms of the environment. And Mark Stone scores that shorthanded goal to get things going midway through the first period, and suddenly it's just like the floodgates open. And then Nick Hague gets that goal minutes later, and then suddenly, you know, eventually the route would be on. But it seemed like once they were able to break open the scoring, once they were able to get going, it just seemed like that confidence that stemmed from them going into that game 5 wanting to win on home ice really set the tone. And I think that's when everything just open. But yeah, they did not want to risk the chance of going back to Florida for a game 6. They felt confident that they could get the job done, knowing how well they played in games 3 and 4, and it ultimately led to just absolute domination from the second period on.
You know, Danny, so much we talk about is when Bill Foley, when he did his interview year 1, and he made the comment about Cup and 6. When you heard him say that in year 1, what was your initial thought? Like, did you think it was possible that this team could actually win the Stanley Cup within 6 years? Or were you like, hey, he's probably just saying what he's got to say to sell tickets?
Well, two things to that. One, my first initial reaction was, that's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off. The second reaction I had was, I remember going back to my initial year 1 season predictions, about a month before they even played a game, and I said Vadim Shipachev was going to lead the team with 80 points. Now, obviously, I would bat 0-for-2 in that sense, but you know, the fact that Bill felt so strongly about that. I mean, of course you're going to, because you want to get people in the seats, you want to get people in the stands, you want to get people, you want to get eyes on the product, and it's a brand new market. It's Vegas finally gets its first sports town. So of course, if you're the owner, you're going to want to say any and everything to be like, yeah, we can be competitive. But in reality, no one thought this team was going to get 109 points in year one. No one thought that they were going to cruise through three rounds and find themselves in the Stanley Cup final. And, you know, who knows in revisionist history what Bill would have done had they ended up beating Washington in year one. I don't even know if you can fathom to think of that, if that were the case. But the fact that they were able to do what they did in year one and just continue to build off of that. And, of course, that goes to the work of Jordan McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon of what they were able to do in building this roster and sustain that success. Because I've always said it from year one, it's a whole lot different when you're winning. It's easier to build the thing from the ground up if you're losing right off the bat. It's a whole other thing. Winning changes everything. And that has really been the mantra for this franchise for 7 years. They've been able to stay competitive. They've been able to keep their foot on the gas since year one. And they've been able to find ways to be better, it seems like, each year. And that goes to, I guess, more so what the front office has done. But when you're looking at what Bill proclaimed even before they played a game, I don't know if he had the almanac from Back to the Future. I honestly don't know, but it would not have surprised me at that rate if he did.
Danny Webster, Las Vegas Review-Journal. He's joining us here as we reminisce 1 year later on a Vegas Golden Knights Stanley Cup championship victory. You know, you bring up a really interesting point, Danny, in that no one really expected the Golden Knights to come out in their inaugural season and, A, make the playoffs, let alone make the Stanley Cup final. And, you know, you look at the expansion draft, you look at what Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee were able to do there just in terms of accruing assets. And then that pivot point, right, where you recognize how good the team is year one. You recognize that you have all of a sudden in front of you like a 5 to 10 year window where if you play this thing right, if you go out and you acquire the pieces that you need, you can be back here again and again and again and again. How much do we, I don't want to say how much credit, because all the credit in the world should go to McPhee and McCrimmon in identifying that and creating that window, but do we maybe not talk about that enough? Because it would have been very easy to stick to the plan, say year one was kind of an anomaly, and go about building this thing slowly, but it was a plan that you pivot to accelerate and take advantage of a window that you've created for yourself.
Yeah, I agree. I think that transition from year one to year two was so critical, because if you remember going into that off season, they made a huge change to their top six. And of course that meant not re-signing James Neal, mm-hmm. going out and getting Max Pacioretty and going at Paul Stastny. And that, to me, was the moment where, and George kind of alluded to it at the time, they felt like that their second line wasn't playing well enough defensively, and they wanted to shore that up. Well, if you're able to add on what they did in year one and, you know, fix things here and there and go about your business in year two, and if you're able to play better, then you're doing the right things. And then they go out and get Mark Stone. And then, of course, that changes the complexity of your two-way game on your second line, and everything just changes from there. And then you always wonder, if the not a major happens in Game 7, is that team good enough to win the whole thing? And, you know, I think the realistic mm-hmm. argument is, yeah, I feel like that team, given where everything was going at the time and the way they were playing down the stretch, I feel like that team definitely could have won the cup or at least gotten back to the final, because everything was breaking right for them. So that transition from year one, knowing that they weren't going to bring everybody back, knowing that they had to retool, and knowing that they put themselves in a position where they could get these free agents and get these trade acquisitions to come in and make an impact, I don't think that offseason is talked about enough, just because I think, one, it set the tone for that year and a little bit beyond, but two, it kind of set the culture for what the Golden Knights were going to do for the years to come and how aggressive they were going to be in their approach to that.
Danny, maybe a loaded question and maybe a bit of an unfair question here, because I don't know if I could answer it, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Okay.
What was the one move that this team made that put them over the top? Was it Jack Eichel? Was it Mark Stone? Was it maybe something else?
I think just by default, I would say Stone, only because that was the move that signified this is going to be the future captain of the team. And I think you needed that person to come in, you know, for as much as for the first couple of years, this team thrived on the mentality of having 20 captains on the roster, and they thrived on that mentality and building off the community and being that. I think adding Mark Stone at the deadline was the move that really put it over the top, just because you knew that guy was going to eventually be the captain of Ottawa if he ever did re-sign there. But you knew that you were going to get this guy long-term, and you knew he was going to be the guy that was going to be the emotional leader. He was going to be the leader in the locker room one day. And I think once that move was made and you saw just how effective he was in his 200-foot game and just how much of a difference maker he was, I think was able to set the tone for what they would do later on. Of course, you know, getting Eichel, that's huge. You know, making the moves that they did to shore up the roster and to add depth and add balance, I think helps in a huge way. But I don't know if this team is celebrating a Stanley Cup championship 1 year ago today if it's not for Mark Stone and what he did, and for Mark Stone to come back from two back surgeries in less than a year to put on the postseason performance that he did last year. So I would say Stone for sure.
Yeah, I like that answer. I'm a little bummed that Chapman didn't give you Aiden Hill, the trade for Aiden Hill as an option. But hey, it was Chapman's question. Okay, so let's zero back into that season. And listen, we all knew they were going to win Game 5. But I want to know when you believed this team would win a Stanley Cup. Was it on the morning of Game 5? Was it earlier on in the postseason? Was there a moment in the regular season where you sat back and you said, okay, this team's winning. They're the best team in the league. There's something special about them. They're going to win the whole thing.
I think it was, for me, it was two moments. So this is kind of a cop-out for me. The first moment, I think, was about, it was around mid-March. I can't remember which game it was, but it was mid-March. They were on that run coming out of the Father's Trip, out of the All-Star break. And, you know, they don't have Stone, and they're still dealing with injuries. They're on goaltender number 4, goaltender number 5, however many it is at this point. And I actually, you know what, I think I remember. It was the game in Carolina where Jonathan Quick got a shutout. And that was the moment in the regular season where I thought, that's it. Because if this team can win, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but wasn't it 2 days before that was that game in Tampa where Martinez scored in overtime to win that game? And I think because after the whole, the Donnybrook that happened in Tampa, that trip, I think, and specifically, was the moment where I was like, okay, this team has what it takes to win the Cup. The moment that I think sealed it for me was Game 5 against Edmonton, because they were down 2-1, I believe, at the time, and they go on that stretch where they score, what, the 3 straight in the second period, just blow the roof off the place, and that was without Alex Pietrangelo. And for them to win that game in that fashion and then kill off that 5-minute major early in the third period was absolutely huge, and I thought that was the game specifically where I was like, if they're going to make a run the rest of the way, that was the game that I was going to point to and say that was the moment that they were going to win the Cup.
Yeah, that's a good one. I don't recall what game it was in the regular season. I want to say it was the last time they played Edmonton in the regular season, where it was Ben Hutton coming in. He hadn't played in a while, and he goes out there. He does a great job on Connor McDavid. I don't even think the Golden Knights won that game. I think they just got a point out of it, but they were able to stay ahead of Edmonton in the standings. And then you kind of throw their record from the All-Star break on top of it. It just, there was something different about that team. Now, I do want to know from your perspective. So the final horn goes, you're down there waiting to get on the ice. Like, what was that experience like for you in terms of who you were looking to talk to, what you were asking, what you saw out of the players? Like, what was that experience like?
So that was a madhouse, because I remember we were right right before the loading dock right outside there, and it's just a sea of people. Now, I didn't know the experience of this because I wasn't even close to the ice when the Capitals won. I was in the ninth locker room for that one. But you talk to people that, you know, I talked to a lot of my former coworkers from NHL.com at the time, and, you know, they're telling me all these things like, oh, yeah, when it gets close to, you know, cup clinching game, everyone's downstairs, it's a party, it's a madhouse, that people are trying to talk to everybody. So I kind of went in with that mindset, and I just remember, I think I just wanted to get as many of the remaining six original guys that I could, and that was a madhouse in itself because you're trying to talk to these guys, and they're already with their families, they're celebrating, they've reached the highest point of their lives, and I think I maybe only got a couple, but I remember one moment in particular. I was actually talking with Mark Stone, and he had a couple people around him, and I was talking without the microphone on, and I asked him. I said, you know, what was the mood in the room when the five of the six were introduced? And he said that was probably the best effing moment that I could remember, and I've never gotten goosebumps in a pregame setting in my life. And for him, of all people, keep in mind, for him of all people to say emotionally that was the most charged he had been, coming off a hat trick in the cup clinching game, mind you, for him to say that the intro gave him the most goosebumps and the most energy, that was really telling to me. And that kind of set the tone, I think, for the rest of the night when, you know, you're talking to other guys and they just realize the importance of that moment, the importance and the magnitude of that moment when those five were introduced. And I think that is going to stick with me as far as getting on the ice and talking to people. Just Mark Stone, just as expressive as he is, to just say that, it really surprised me.
So last one for me, and then Chapman, if you've got another one, jump in. But Danny, it's hard to put into words sometimes what this means for fans, what it means for the city. So, you know, no big deal here. Just try to be eloquent about it if you can. What does a year later the championship mean for the city of Las Vegas?
So I mean, I'm born and raised here, right? Like I've lived in this city all my life. This is my hometown. And I, like many people, always thought the coolest thing that you could ever have in this city is a professional sports town event or a professional sports team of any kind. And, you know, people growing up here went through years of just having UNLV basketball, UNLV football, the prize fights that would happen here. UFC obviously lays its claim here. You know, you have Frozen Fury every once in a while. You have the Lakers and Kings playing a preseason game every now and then. But it doesn't feel like anything until you get a professional sports team in this city. And 1 year later, one, it's still crazy to see how much the professional sports landscape here has changed and how in a matter of 2 years, there are three professional championships in this city. And the first team to come here is the proponent of the first one. So it's absolutely insane to think about that. And I think if you're a Golden Knights fan, you have to, you know, I think take a lot of pride in, you know, being one, just being able to be in this city and, you know, everything that this city has gone through since 1 October, and just be happy that the Golden Knights have provided some sort of escape, some sort of hope, some sort of just overall euphoria to give to a lot of people. And I think that if you are a native here and you've been here for many years, you've always wanted that feeling. So even if people are still searching on YouTube 1 year later, these highlights of what happened 1 year ago today, they have that forever. And I think that if you are a fan, if you are a lifelong resident of this place, it's still probably the greatest feeling ever. And the best part is no one can ever take it away from you if you're a fan.
All right, Danny, last one, and I'm sure the listeners probably want to know, what does this team have to do to give the fans another moment like they gave them last year?
Ooh, you know what? That's gonna be interesting. This is gonna be a very interesting offseason. Obviously, with the cap going up to $88 million, that does give the Knights a little bit of leeway for what they want to do roster wise. But it still has a lot of questions, and you know, I think more than anything, it's gonna have to come down to health, and it's gonna have to come down to finding the right pieces for this roster. Because as much of a feel good story as it was last year, bringing everyone but, you know, Phil Kessel and Riley Smith back, it's not going to be that way this year. It's going to be a much different roster. There are going to be a lot of moves that are going to be made to get them cap compliant, and a lot of moves that are going to need to be made in terms of who we see on the ice in game one. But I do think that this team, still at its core, is still going to be one of the tops in the Western Conference, and if they're able to stay healthy and get the goaltending that they got for most of this postseason, for that entire first round against Dallas, that they can beat anybody. But it's definitely going to have to involve a lot of tough decisions this year. But for all the times that maybe we have all questioned Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee, they come right back around and do a thing or two that really catches off guard. So I would say, if you were discouraged at the sight of losing in the first round this year, do not let that linger, because I am pretty sure if everything breaks right for this team, they could absolutely be back in the Cup Final next year and have a chance to win it again.
Yeah, if there's one thing we know about this front office, it's that they want to win. They want to deliver championships to a city. Like, that is what fuels them. I guess I lied. I'm going to throw one more your way. Do you believe Jonathan Marchessault will be a Golden Knight next year?
I do. I think that in the grand scheme of things, I can't, from a locker room standpoint, I cannot imagine a locker room without Jonathan Marchessault, and I don't think anybody on that roster can. I also don't think that it would be conceivable to not bring back, one, a 42-goal scorer from last year, and two, your team's all-time leader in games, points, goals, whatever. He is your leader in everything, and I still think he has a couple of really good years left in him. So alluding to the tough decisions, there are going to be some. I don't think the tough decision includes not bringing back Jonathan Marchessault. I do think they get something done before July 1. And I do think that he will end his career with the Golden Knights.
All right, there you have it. Danny Webster joining us to talk a little Golden Knights present day and reminisce about a Stanley Cup championship. Danny, enjoy the rest of your night, buddy, and we'll chat as we get closer to the NHL draft and free agency.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks for having me. It was a great chat.
All right, that is Danny Webster with the Las Vegas Review-Journal. We'll take a break, come back with one-timers next on the VGK Insider Show.
Carlson left corner, centered, one-timer, score!
It's time for one-timers. One-timers. A quick look at news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury, it's about the recovery.
One-timers, news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Evander Kane will not play in Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Final. It only makes sense. He is unable to perform and be impactful. And it's not an effort issue with Evander Kane. He's dealing with an injury. You just can't afford to have a player on the ice that cannot give you meaningful minutes in a Stanley Cup Final game, especially when you're down 2-0 in the series. So smart there from Chris Knobloch. The other question mark was Darnell Nurse. He is playing. Cody Ceci comes back into the lineup for the Edmonton Oilers. That's how you know it's getting pretty bad from a depth perspective on the blue line. But no score early on in Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Final. And we made a lot about the travel delays for Florida yesterday. Paul Maurice said that, as Paul Maurice generally does, he joked about the idea of the fact that the only thing that really was impacted was that the coaches ate too much food because they were delayed. Doesn't look like there's any issue for the Florida Panthers early on. They're leading. They've got the edge in shots on goal 5-3. So pretty good start here for the Florida Panthers. They're the better team. We'll see kind of how the game progresses from here. Okay. Former St. Louis Blues legend Alexander Steen will succeed Doug Armstrong as general manager in 2026. Steen signed a five-year deal with the Blues to serve first as the assistant general manager to Doug Armstrong for the first 2 years of that contract. Doug Armstrong had two years left on his current contract and signed an extension through 2028-29. When Steen becomes the general manager, Armstrong will move into the president of hockey operations role. What's most noteworthy about this is that it was Doug Armstrong who brought up the idea of getting a succession plan in place so that you're not stagnating as an organization. Like, Doug Armstrong brought the Blues their first ever and only Stanley Cup championship in 2019. And though he's done a great job as GM of this team, at some point you've got to do what's best for everybody. And for Doug Armstrong, that is to move into a different type of role and get somebody else into that spot as GM. Fresh eyes, a fresh approach, a fresh look might just be what the St. Louis Blues need to get to the playoffs and back into contention. Now, I guess the main question that I have is, how much time do you believe is enough for Alex Steen to really hone in on the intricacies of being a general manager in the National Hockey League? Is 2 years as an AGM enough to feel confident in Alexander Steen to do the job when it's his time?
Well, you got to give him some time. They're in a rebuild. So this is a very different team than the one that won the Stanley Cup a couple years ago. And you've got to give him time. I think if you're confident that he's going to be a good general manager, you give him 3-4 years to go out there and prove it. And I know in the world of sports, 4 years, if you don't produce right away, like, people get impatient. But he's a guy who knows the organization. Doug Armstrong, as you mentioned, confident in him and his ability to take over and run this team on the day-to-day operations. You give him time, and you see what he can do. There's nothing worse than you let a guy go too soon and he goes somewhere else and has success. So if you truly believe in him, you give him time. Because this is not a team that is competing for a Stanley Cup next season or likely the season after that. So you have to have some patience.
All right. Well, he's got 2 years to learn the job, and then he'll be fine after that. The New York Rangers sign Kaapo Kakko to a one-year deal worth $2.4 million. It's essentially what his qualifying offer would have been if the Rangers would have gotten there in a couple of weeks. I don't really have, like, a strong opinion or feeling on this one. Like, $2.4 million, it's fine on a one-year deal. Kaapo Kakko has not, like, taken off the way that Alexis Lafreniere has. So 1 year, 2.5, 2.4, like, that's fine, especially with the cap going up. It's not going to hurt you significantly if you're the New York Rangers. You can kind of pencil him into your middle six, and he'll give you okay minutes there. It's about what he should be making, and it's not really a net positive or net negative in any way for the New York Rangers.
Well, he's a guy who I think you could say has been a big disappointment in the NHL. He was the number two overall pick in 2019. And
he's fine. Like, it's not every number two overall is going to, like, hit. He's fine.
Well,
it's okay.
What I was getting at is it took Lafreniere some time to get acclimated. So you give him some time as well. I mean, he plays on a good team. I don't think he hurts you. Like, he's not a bad player where he's out there causing problems and you're losing games because of him, or you have to go out and win in spite of him. But I think you probably want a little bit more from him, and you hope that, you know, him signing this one-year deal will maybe motivate him a little bit because he's going into another contract year.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know how much it's going to motivate him beyond just trying to become a better hockey player. Like, you're only going to get so many cracks, so many opportunities. Like you mentioned, has he been a disappointment? by some people's metrics, probably, but, you know, the same thing as you mentioned could be said about Alexis Lafreniere, and he's taken a step. He already took a step last year. So we'll see whether or not it can kind of click for Kako. Patrick Laine and the Columbus Blue Jackets are working on a trade to move Patrick Laine out. Now, Pierre LeBrun reported this first. Both player and the club mutually working on a trade out of Columbus for Laine. Laine is in need of a fresh start. He wants a fresh start. It has not gone particularly well in Columbus for Laine. Just 6 goals, 9 points, only 18 games last year. Missed some time with a concussion and also entered the player assistance program on January 28th. And he remains in that program today. That was something that LeBrun pointed out in his reporting. To me, it's been a tough go for Patrick Laine over the last couple of years, last couple of seasons. And I'm not just talking about on the ice, but like personally as well. I think that it's commendable for the Columbus Blue Jackets to understand what their player is asking for and trying their best to facilitate that in a way that is best for the organization, but also best for the player, not just from an ice time perspective or a hockey perspective, but from like a mental health and person perspective. So I have nothing but respect for the Columbus Blue Jackets for getting to this spot where they are going to try their best to facilitate this as quickly and efficiently as possible. And at the same time, nothing but respect for Patrick Laine, who's gone through a lot and deserves to have a clean slate wherever he ends up next.
Yeah, he's a guy that I root for. I like him as a player, and this may sound harsh, and I certainly don't mean it to be harsh, but unfortunately for the Columbus Blue Jackets, his trade value is probably at an all-time low, and it sucks because when he's on, he is an amazing player. And for Columbus, if you're going to trade him, you're probably not going to get fair market value for Patrick Laine, which sucks. Because I think at his best, if you're moving him, you're getting a haul in return. Today, maybe not so much. But I root for him. I'm hoping everything works out for both him and the Columbus Blue Jackets. Anytime someone goes into the player assistance program, you root for them to get the help that they need. And, you know, he's a guy who I want to see healthy because he's a dynamic player. But more importantly, I want to see him healthy. And that's ultimately the thing that matters the most.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, Don Waddell, like, this is a tough spot to be in. Like, as you mentioned, it's not the high value that you would expect in terms of the player and Patrick Laine, but if anyone's going to be able to do pretty good in terms of a trade, I'm going to lean on Don Waddell in this spot. Did you see that the first round of players that will be competing in the battle for Vegas is out? Joining Jack Eichel, who's the new captain of the team Vegas Golden Knights, we'll be joined by Zach Whitecloud, Keegan Kolesar, Nick Hague, Logan Thompson, and Alec Martinez. Also of note, Ryan Reeves is slated to participate as well.
Yeah, a friend of mine texted me. They bumped into Ryan Reeves the other day out and about. And he said to me, I think he still has a house here. I'm like, yeah, I'm almost positive he still has his house here. But yeah, I saw that and I'm like, cool. That's really cool. Like, the one that really fascinates me, Alec Martinez. Like, he's still going to be, even if he retires from hockey, it tells me he's still going to be out and about and part of this organization and hopefully, you know, in some capacity. So when I saw his name, I got excited because I like Alec Martinez. And even if he's not playing for this franchise, I hope he's still around the city and around the organization because I think he's a good guy to have, a good mentor for a lot of guys. And he just strikes me as such a cool guy.
Mm-hmm. You're gonna cover the event, right?
Yeah, I'm gonna plan on being there. Yeah,
so you can like hang out and talk to him.
Yeah, I'd like to talk football, talk baseball, no hockey.
Probably not. Definitely not a selfie situation for you.
No.
Okay, good. Glad we got that cleared up. Those are your one-timers for today. Thursday, June 13th. Catching Up with Chapman is next.
That was One-Timers. One-Timers. Brought to you by Paul Pata Law. It's not about the injury. It's about the recovery. When the guy wouldn't stop talking, we had no choice but to give him his own segment. It's time for Catching Up with Chapman.
You know, Ryan, I'm not really someone who notices, like, small details a lot of times and the little things, and I think a lot of people kind of criticize the Florida Panthers jerseys and logos because maybe they're not the most interesting or exciting. But one thing I noticed that I had not noticed, and I don't know how it took me 7 years of watching this team in person to not notice this, but did you know that the logo on the white jersey and the logo on the red jersey are not the same logo across the front of the jersey? The red jersey.
Yes, I did.
It says
I did.
Panthers above the Panther on the jersey. But on the white jersey, it says Florida above the Panther on the jersey. Now, I have always noticed the way that they do the captain, where they have, like, because their owner is a grad of the United States Military Academy, like Bill Foley. And they have, like, it looks like an army patch on the sleeve to indicate captain. And I've known that. But I did not know that it said Florida on the white jerseys and Panthers on the red jerseys. And now my mind is completely blown because I feel like I'm a complete bozo for not noticing this much, much sooner.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been right there in front of you the entire
it's
time.
It's so blatantly obvious. Like, I saw the
Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, Stanley Cup final. I didn't even, I don't know. I don't know how I didn't notice it, but maybe some other people didn't notice it as well. I hope someone comes to bat for me and says that they didn't notice it either, because I feel like a complete buffoon, because I feel like I should have known this, and I didn't. So someone help me out. You know, tell me they didn't notice it either.
Yeah, I think everybody noticed it. It's been a key part of their sweaters for a while now. Speaking of sweaters, the Utah Hockey Club released their sweaters for next season. Did you see it?
Yeah. How do you go from Kachina to that?
Well, listen, they don't even have a nickname yet. It is... I forgot what they named the colors. It was like rock black and salt white.
My favorite is...
And mountain blue. That's what it was.
Inspired by our love for Utah and our passion for hockey. Oh, boy.
It's literally black, white, and light blue. That's it.
And it says Utah.
Like, as bare bones a sweater as you can get.
They better hit this out of the park.
Don't screw the name up, Utah. They have to. All right. Game 3 underway. We'll see you tomorrow.